chair of this Business Services Committee. I'm here to call to order the meeting for the Martin County Workforce Development Board Business Services Committee. Yes. Does somebody want to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Ready to begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We want to start our roll call.
George Boutros.
Here.
Kathy Boyd.
Present.
Karen Caswell.
Here.
Mike Daniel.
Here.
Robert Knowles.
Here.
Annalisa Lutz.
Present.
Carlos Oregon. And Todd Swart.
Here.
And we have quorum.
I will ask if there's any public comment.
No public comment.
So, committee is responsible for developing recommendations for the business service team, enhancing engagement, submitting plans to the State of California Workforce Development Board, conducting labor market intelligence analysis, and overseeing rapid response and layoff of version services. So we can go around and introduce ourselves and where we're from. George, do you want to start?
Sure. Yeah. My name is George Boucher. So I'm with Orange County Council.
My name is Karen Caswell. I run a startup company called Bridge Robotics, and we're focusing on fundamentals of industrial robotics education.
Morning, everyone. Robert Knowles with Edwards Life Sciences. I oversee the talent development of their operations organization.
Kathy Boyd, and I represent Orange County Department of Education and connect with education
business. Mike Daniel, I represent the SBDC for Orange County Midland Empire. Service about 10,000 small businesses with one on consultant service.
So, Liz, I own my own company, I'm an entrepreneur and small business owner, working in fundraising, outreach, different kinds of issues.
Morning, Todd Swartz, Southern California Edison, and our economic services group, like Orange County, parts of Valley County.
Yeah.
Francis Fong, the Deputy Director of the Orange County Workforce Development Board.
Nancy Cook, Executive Director of the Orange County Workforce Development Board.
Everybody?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Justin Hyatt Marline, the regional branch manager with the workforce of the company.
Kevin Little, I'm the regional organizer.
Karen Subnet, business solutions manager, lab version of response.
Steve Vladi Jamon, business services programs manager.
Monica Zama, the OCCS administration.
Here. It's an awesome Tuesday, right? No rain, no forecast.
Sorry, really quickly, if anybody needs to use Gotham, I have a badge for families. Thank you.
Well, Nancy, I'll turn it over to you to get started.
Thank you, Chair. For information items, we'll start with number six. For business services, we have our business services grant program. We present on the overview of the last quarter.
So I'm just going to report on quarter three hiring events and our career fair that we held during that quarter in January through March. We hosted 10 hiring events at our Workforce Solutions Center North and South locations. So those included multi-industry hiring events, which include multiple employers from various industries. We also had our very first career exploration event, and that was in partnership with our Anaheim Workforce Connection partners. We also had single employer recruitment information sessions, and we had a government jobs hiring event in partnership with PPD. So that hiring event was attended by over 100 individuals. We had 11 government agencies there providing information on how to apply for the positions and also provided information sessions so that individuals could attend these information sessions to get more information on what their hiring process looked like. So through our hiring events, we served 31 employers during quarter three. We had 293 job seekers attend these events. And in addition to hosting events, we also refer all of those individuals to our career services programming. So in the case that they do not secure employment with from one of the employers to attend our hiring events, they can enroll into our career services programs. In quarter three, we also had our career fair. We had it in partnership with District 3 Supervisor Donald Wagner. We also had it in partnership with the City of Lake Forest and the Lake Forest Chamber of Commerce. It was held at the Lake Forest Community Center. The career fair hosted 75 employers and was attended by 193 job seekers. Great turnout. 24 of the businesses that responded to our outreach stated that they received applications from attending job seekers, and they received a total of 196 applications. So just within 24 of those 75 employers. So many of those applications were still being considered and being reviewed. 52 interviews with job seekers had been scheduled since the time of our outreach, and offers of employment were also still pending and ongoing. Five of the businesses reported that they had already hired 7 of the job seekers that attended the event. So our outreach continues with these employers, communication with them, so that they can continue to update us on a career fair, how many people they were able to hire through our career fairs and hiring. Any questions?
So we often, instead of giving you all this performance data, to make it more of an interactive, where you can ask questions, you can answer them for the committee level.
Yeah. Happy to answer any questions you might have about our hiring events or career fairs.
What kind of businesses were there? What kind of jobs were being offered?
There are multiple. So they range from hospitality industries, from government jobs, manufacturing, healthcare, tourism.
Who did the most
hiring? I have to go back and look at those reports and working on outreach calls to identify who were the ones that did the most hiring.
I got you to the Lake Forest one. Is that February?
Yes,
on Tesla.
Yeah,
for the organization's information. It's really well organized. I liked hearing that you had 24 out of 75 responded to surveys.
Well, 24 of those that 24 of those who responded stated that they had received a total of 196 job applications, but we actually had, I believe, a 75% response to our surveys and to our outreach. Actually, we've been really we've been utilizing all of our resources through business solutions to really do outreach to our business to make sure. I apologize. Actually, for businesses, it was a 90% response rate. For our job seekers, which is typically the one that's harder to get responses from, that was 70%. So we really increased or improved the way that we do outreach to our job seekers to ensure that we're getting feedback from them. Because our feedback is important. That's how we improve our events. So we want to make sure that we contact them not only to get information on whether or not they've been hired or they received any for schedule for any interviews, but also how can we improve these events so that they are better for them. It is for them.
Having been for a few years with some colleagues, that's a really major uptick. What are you doing differently, or what have you done to get those responses back?
So in addition to having staff outside of our events to make sure that we're capturing as they leave, one of the things that we started to do is utilize our call center. So immediately after our career fairs, we have our call center call every single person who's attended the event to follow up with them. And we, hey, can I ask you a few questions? And those are our survey questions. That they can take the survey, because a lot of people, they attend and they say they're going to take the survey and then they don't. Okay. So we try to really utilize the resources that we have at hand to do immediate follow-up with them.
It's full and part-time jobs or all full-time?
No, full-time and part-time.
And part-time.
So one of the things I loved in the past years is this committee's report out, back to Todd's question, of the actual companies. So I don't know if it's from the meeting, but if there's maybe something we could get shared via email. You have it. So that's something that we're going to say later.
Oh, great.
The other thing is, our question is, are these both hourly and salary types of jobs? I could not get this, but I wasn't.
Yes. So it'll... The types of positions are obviously dependent on the employers, but they vary from part-time to hourly to salary, entry-level, more executive-level positions. So it just depends on the employer. So they do vary.
And from immediately in this last event, is there a I'm trying to think, like, I have family members who've been laid off type of thing. And one of them is an accountant and she and a project manager. And she doesn't believe in her mind that this kind of event yields those kinds of positions. And so it's just like, I don't know how to convince her myself. I'm just, it's something maybe we can all think about is how do we advertise that these job fairs aren't necessarily for low level positions only. I mean, obviously there's entry level positions, but there's also mid and even advanced career, like you said, executive posting. So I'm just thinking, how do
one of the things that we've done, sometimes it's hard to get people to the website, but on our website, anytime that we register an employer to attend the career fair, we do post their logo on our website that directly links to their career pages. So the individual who wants to attend the career fair can do research prior to the career fair, and they can see all of the positions that all of our employers are hiring for, what level they are, what the rate of pay is, where the location is. So they're able to see that prior, so they don't have to attend the career fair not knowing necessarily who's there. That is all prepared and is updated on a daily basis as employers are registering. We also try to do, or we're trying to do a better job, and it's all coming from feedback from our job seekers who complete the survey, on how to prepare for the day of, because we do know that we do have a lot of people that just find out about the event or maybe don't do the research beforehand. So how can we help them when they arrive to know what employers to go speak to, what positions that they're hiring for? So we've been adjusting our registration questions. So both for job seekers and for our employers to know exactly what types of positions that they are going to be hiring for, whether they're going to be doing interviews on the spot, so that we can identify that on the maps that we create for the job seekers to attend, but also to create some type of a folder that will guide us as the staff who are there to help the job seekers in helping the job seekers navigate the career fair. So if somebody comes and says, I'm looking for an accounting job, we can look at our cheat sheet that we will be creating and letting them know if these specific employers are going to be, are hiring for accounting positions. And we're gonna use the data that we get from the job seeker registration forms, because we will be asking them what kind of positions you're looking for, to kind of develop a map for us to know these are the most popular positions that people are looking for. So we will be able to do our homework on our end as well, so that we are prepared for those who walk in and need that information.
Did you say that 7 people were hired? Was that on the spot or after?
They were hired on the spot, because that was based off of surveys that we received from immediately after that. Yeah, there were interviews. We did have an interview station. So we did see a lot of employers, some employers doing interviews right on the spot. So that was nice to see. We also had our Workforce Solutions Center station. So we had a mock, career services center there with our service providers. So individuals who did not have resumes could go and print out their resumes or meet with case managers to enroll in our programs.
I think it's really, really wonderful that there's a lot of tracking and there seems to be more engagement on the back end, which is a really wonderful thing. And I'm also curious to know whether it might be possible to quantify the value of these careers by way of salary, right? And that would require a little bit more preparation. But if there were a way for us to tell the story of what value this board and your work, our work together, have given to this economy, by virtue of 7 people were hired, this is the amount of, frankly, salaries or whatever that was, just to tell the story of the economic development impact to the community. Just the data. Is that something that might be, I'm not asking for it right now, but maybe think about how there might be a way to figure out what that story is. Because at the end of the day, I like the stories about this one. And being able to say this here, our economic impact, Orange County was X number of dollars by way of X number of people who were able to get access to careers.
That's fair. Yeah. How does one employer get pulled in this pool?
For career fairs, we have a very long list of employers that we've worked with in the past. And who've attended our events in the past that we've come into gathered contact information for. So whenever we do have a career fair, we send out our flyer and registration form so they can invite them to attend. We also share our flyers with our partners, community partners, so that they can share with their networks. And our board of supervisors typically puts in puts information in their newsletter so they can reach their audience as well. So that's typically how we do our advertising and marketing.
Okay, so I figure how we get new blood, if you will, and it sounds like it's a network thing.
Correct. And we're also, again, aside from following up with contacts that we already have, we also are utilizing our call center to do a lot of outreach to new businesses. So we do calls on a daily basis to let new businesses that we know are hiring or new, are let them know that we do have these types of events, that we have hiring incentives, hiring events to support them with their hiring needs.
So if there's someone at the table or somewhere in our network who would like to participate, would that be just a matter of reaching out to me?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I can send out the flyers and then you can direct them.
Yes.
So as a small business that started in 2020, I didn't even know the Workforce Development Board existed,
right,
or the value. So I'm just trying to think about what else, right? So real estate brokers, right, who are placing people, large landlords like Irvine Company. So I'm just thinking about, I feel like the large businesses are totally clued in and know how to get value, but it's the small ones. How do you get value?
Working with Mike Daniel. Yeah, so we attend a lot of the events that SBDC puts on. They have a wide network of businesses who are part of the SBDC. So we do attend, provide presentation. We're constantly going there. We actually get a lot of contacts and a lot of business partners through those events.
It's interesting because I've been part of Octane. I was in a women's founder program and I still never got any connection through. So I think it's thinking about, to your point, it's like the big companies, you guys add tons of value. How do you get startups and the smaller companies really, you know, they're looking at potentially higher tech, higher paid jobs, mm-hmm. and how do they leverage this activity?
Well, right now, this is a great insight for you to share as a small business owner, Octane. So that's going to be someone that we reach out to. So that's where the board comes in and sharing your resources and experiences as business owners, so we can follow up. Absolutely.
So in addition to SPC, we also, you know, work with the chambers, work a lot with the small businesses. So
Scott Fox. Runs Orange County
Startup
Council.
Okay.
And for like literally $99, you could sign up to be a sponsor. And he's just a kind of a startup connector. He runs events, but he has a weekly newsletter that it would be nothing. Literally for $99, you're a sponsor. And then, you know, he always announces new sponsors and you can put together an article about this is who we are, this is what we do, et cetera. I will send you that information.
Yeah, we're always looking for ways to connect with businesses in Orange County. Because like you said, nobody knows about it. So we want to make sure that's one of our goals, to make sure that we get the word out. Thank you.
Well, I guess one question.
Okay.
How can we help you? Like, what is your biggest need? How can we make sure we're helping?
Connecting us to employers. Connecting us to agencies that might, you know.
Yeah, I had a quick question as well. Is this a full list of the industry partners that work with the work for the
We'll review that at item 7. Yeah.
Oh, let's see. We'll read this.
You will.
Thank you.
One more website. Is there a place, like you said, job seekers can go on to the job fairs and they can get all that?
Yes. Do you have the same end of solutions for businesses, like the startup businesses that they can go on the website
like you could put a tile on there, like become a partner here. Here's all the benefits. And they can just sign up with their information when your call center can follow up with them. Or could we put that on Instagram? Right.
We do have in our business page, one of the first things that they'll always see is for our business needs assessment. So they get to input their information there and let us know exactly what it is they need from us. And then they have information on our survey as well.
So maybe if we just put a little bit of a tab on there, like the employees help will become your pipeline agent, or something like that, just a little bit more than us seeing their information and telling what they'll get out of it, maybe that could shift it a little bit.
Almost like a free recruiting service.
Right. Yeah. And then I would basically be able to use that. And anytime I'm trying to get a company that is looking for it, I'm just hand them that, like go to this website and sign up. And then it's kind of like less human interaction with us.
That's correct.
Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Chair, the next item is a program update from our rapid response and form manager. We just received this morning another one for the 99 cent store. So that's a little bit more of a background. And then I'll go over to Leslie.
Hi, everyone. Good morning.
Good morning.
So for quarter three, we had, so for quarter three, we actually had 25 businesses that were impacted by layoffs. And of those 25 businesses, eight of them had layoffs of over 100 individuals. And then as far as the impact goes or impacted employees, there was 2,918 individuals that were impacted and 853 of the 2,918, 853 individuals actually retained employment. But that's only because one of the warrants that we received from the company, which was Tower Semiconductor, they submitted a warrant. They were only in a downturn for 2 weeks, but they ended up rehiring their 699 people anyway. So that's why the number looks a little bit inflated with the 850. Technically, it's really not that high. And the highest impacted, or the business that had the highest impacted employee was actually Activision Blizzard. And that's probably because of the Microsoft merger. So a lot of the Activision employees ended up unfortunately getting laid off. And Microsoft took over, 479 people were impacted. As far as the list of, I guess, the businesses goes with Orange County, we had 21 cities in South Orange County that were impacted, 11 cities in North Orange County that were impacted, but that pretty much covers the majority of our cities anyway. And then out of all of those, Irvine was the heaviest impacted with 10 companies that was actually listing Irvine as, you know, their place of location that was being impacted. Huntington Beach had 4, and then Costa Mesa had 3.
We're working with our regional advisor to see how we list those companies to you. It is public information, but there's some sensitivities in getting out more of this information. So we'll try to package that.
And then drumming it down to, thanks, Nancy, and then drumming it down to just our four industry sectors. We had 10 for manufacturing, and then we had healthcare, 2 companies were impacted, IT, 1, and then hospitality, we had 3. But the trend that we've been seeing as far as the layoff goes, it's basically been the mergers, the acquisitions. A lot of the businesses were losing contract, and we actually had 2 businesses, Safran Cabin, located in Huntington Beach, and then also Lund Motion, which is in Brea, who ended up moving their production line to Mexico, citing that it's cheaper to do business internationally. So those were basically the main trends that we've been seeing. Thankfully, a lot of our businesses has been really receptive with having us come in and actually do the rapid response presentation. Sometimes they'll offer the virtual simply because a lot of the staff are already on a paid non-working leave. They're not reporting on site, but they're still willing to go on ahead and do the rapid response orientation virtually, which, you know, either way, we're still very much open to it, regardless of whether it's on site or if it's online. We did have, obviously, we can't catch all of them. Unfortunately, there were some who decided that the rapid response was just not the best for their team. They did mention it was because that, one, a lot of the employees that was being impacted was mainly senior level employees. They were looking at high level managerial, like senior director of like R&D, and they felt that the actual rapid response orientation, unfortunately, wouldn't be a good fit. So
some businesses opted not to do that, but thankfully we do have, you know, just from the last quarter, we had 8 businesses who had participated in our rapid response orientation. We have 5 right now that are upcoming. So hopefully we can get a lot of participation from those impacted and businesses who actually send our information out to the impacted employees.
Marianne, could you, for the board, kind of walk through the process of when, who has to submit a warm notice and when to reach out kind of that time?
Sure. So as far as the warm notices go, and I know it's been a little bit different with some of the businesses, some actually don't have to meet the criteria. Well, some businesses don't technically have to send a warrant, but they do. And there is a criteria that they do have to meet, which is the 75 employee threshold. Sorry, I'm like losing my place. There's 75 employee threshold. But some do send warrant notices, just like the company that I had mentioned, Tower Semiconductor, who submitted a warrant, even though it was only a 2-week downturn. But I guess they wanted to just cover their company and send the warrant anyway. And so typically we respond to them or we reach out within a day, maybe within a couple of hours or so of getting the warrant, because we want to make sure that we, you know, we take swift action in reaching out to the businesses, making contact as quickly as possible. One of the other issues is sometimes we don't get the warrant soon enough. Sometimes we'll get it maybe a month out, which was the case from two quarters ago from Yellow Freight. When they closed that, we didn't even get a warrant for that one. The company just completely, they just shut down. And so sometimes it'll take a month. Sometimes it'll be like 2 or 3 weeks into the warrant notice. But we try to do our best to really reach out to them within 24 to 48 hours and try to schedule that planning meeting to set up the date and time of when we can host the rapid response orientation and then eventually lead to the orientation itself.
When you go out on that, do you bring other resources or do you start with just yourself and your team?
So we do carry, are you talking about the-
Like a red page or something, yeah. So that they know other resources that are available to help them.
Yes, so we do go out, as far as the orientation goes, we do go out with our partner agencies. So we've got EDD Workforce Services, EDD Unemployment. We have our third party financial partners that do go out during a rapid response. So it's a very tailored day or a few hours when it comes to the orientation, simply because we understand that some of the businesses who are impacted are still operating. You know, they don't have the capability to just have all of their employees just stop, sit for an hour and a half or 2 hours and then get back to work. So every now and then it'll be a rotation, but it's a very strict and streamlined process, but we will have our partners there to present on their resources. We'll have our actual resources with us. And then at the end of the presentation, we actually email those resources to human resources, and then they can send it out to their impacted employees.
So do you, I guess my question is, like, do you bring cities with you and do cities know? And just thinking of like certain cities like Garden Grove has their own loan program, or maybe they can subsidize them to stay in business or operate a little differently. Like there's just possibly opportunities by bringing other resources to the table as well.
We actually have not done that. So as far as orientation go, it's mainly just the rapid response team talking about the resources that they offer and as they transition out of employment from that one company into whatever they plan to do afterwards.
Yeah.
But it's mainly just been that, but it could be a great opportunity for that for that as well.
Try to keep.
Yes.
Yeah, and strategically, one of the questions I know that we've discussed in the past is how do we get in front of, but we believe, and you can let me know if it's not the case, by the time they file the warrant, is it true that it might be too late? Or can we actually avert that?
Yeah.
It's not a question for staff. It's really more for the board to figure out how do we strategically let the businesses know, regardless of the 75, there are all of these different avenues through which if you might be struggling, and we talked about this with the state when we met a few weeks ago, a checklist. It's like a medical health checklist for your business. And we understand as an entrepreneur, it's hard to work on the business because you're always in the business. But if there were a way to let more companies know about the resources that could help them through a hard time, like utilities, for example, so you can be averted long before they have to do a warrant. Am I?
Too idealistic in this scenario? Is that doable?
It makes sense. We do work with Todd. We do work with Todd where he gets in front of it and he will connect us for resources on the job training, WEX, lab version. So I do appreciate that. So if there's anything that the board thinks that a health checklist is something that we could develop in terms of sending that out prior to just the companies we work with.
So that's actually something that, because our team has grown so much, that's actually something that we are trying to do now. And we're trying to create a toolkit for businesses, and not simply just for the businesses who have submitted the board notices, but it's just any businesses who are, wherever they are in the business cycle, it doesn't really matter. So we are trying to put together like a toolkit for them to basically figure out, as far as businesses go, what resources are available to you. And then obviously, not just that, but for their staff also, what resources can be available for your employees. So we want to make it a very a full circle type of service, but that is a toolkit that we are, you know, slowly trying to build, because our rapid response team has grown now. And so it gives us a little bit more leverage to figure out what else we can do and really figure out, you know, sometimes like other solutions to certain problems that, you know, that we can address, because we know that when they submit a warrant, unfortunately, it closes off some resources for them. For example, like incumbent worker training, you know, they wouldn't be able to apply for incumbent worker training if they were already in an active layoff status, and that closes off that resource. But, you know, what else can we do to make sure that they can tap into something else other than that and see what we can do for them?
That, you know, you're right. Once somebody's made the decision for layoff, you really can't do it. But what I always look at is, okay, if the business is not completely out of business or hasn't left the state, are they open to having a meeting to kind of go through that checklist, right? And then obviously, if we catch them way in advance and be proactive, then, you know, like, okay, yeah, mergers, there's not a whole lot you can do on that. They don't typically let you know that in advance, right? So, but again, we want to give them those advantages. But can you not use rapid response dollars to kind of shore up what's remaining and hopefully get them back on their feet or retrain people? Is that's available?
Probably can. Yeah, with the incumbent worker, yes, we can. But we can with the businesses that have not submitted the warrant. We can certainly bring up those resources, let them know that this is what we can do to tap. This is what your business can do to tap into those layoff version of rapid response dollars.
Okay.
But the warrant, you know,
so once there's a warrant, you can't do rapid response. Rapid response has to happen prior.
Yes.
So the
layoff reversion piece of it,
okay.
but not when they're already on an active warrant.
Did you say there's a threshold, the number of the people impacted before you can do a warrant?
No, so the threshold is like 75 employees are mandatory for them to actually submit. Yeah.
75
employees.
Being laid off?
Size of company.
Total size of the company. So you have to have at least 75 employees to be able to submit to be required.
The obligation and publicity of this. I mean, it may some business send some sort of signal they don't want out there.
Right. Yes.
So
they're
it is
obligated to notify the work.
They are the executive director, the board supervisors, and their local, the board, the local elected city official, EDD board or EDD, and their local workforce board.
Or being an employer in Orange County, they're out.
Was it 50 before? Did I make that up?
No, so 75 for the actual employees,
yeah.
And then if you're laying off individual, then you can, you know, you can technically submit. However, if it's one, two, all.
Thanks, Maria. Chair, in your packets for item 6, we have included two flyers for you. There are weekly hiring events that a Business Solutions Unit conducts. So we have a hospitality and tourism hiring event this week. And then next week is a multi-industry hiring event, just for your information. The third flyer on page 6 of your packet is kind of the layoff version. So we do hold weekly, monthly, even if there wasn't one person who was affected by a layoff.
general sector. And another upcoming event that is impacted is a career fair in partnership with Garden Grove City and sponsored by Supervisor Doe. That'll be at the Garden Grove Community Center. May 1st. Get you some information. Moving to item 6, State Chair, successes and opportunities. We are seeing a lot of opportunities for grant writing for apprenticeships are coming down the pipeline. There was some with OCDE, some Santiago Community Colleges. So there's a lot of partnerships that we're kind of in discussions with that we to report on for. And then,
Labor market information and industry updates.
For that, if you turn to page 7, spend the list that Verge asked for, and then Todd also had asked for a list. These are the partners that have participated in, so actively participated in hiring events. So we kind of broke them down by industry. Our priority sectors, of course, healthcare, hospitality, manufacturing. There was no IT reporting in terms of companies, but that's because they're more of a crossover. They're within the companies that are coming. So we're going to work with the business team to kind of capture those jobs, those industry jobs. We did include construction and education because those are California jobs first serve kind of priority sectors. So we want to capture that. So construction was about 5%. Healthcare was about 20% of our participating. And education was 20%. Healthcare was 10%. And hospitality, tourism was 7%, manufacturing was 7%, and then IT as like a company was 0, but work jobs. So we'll take that over, capture that information for you. On page 9 is the EDD report out. It's the most recent. We wanted to point out that the job increases, the second bullet item, you'll see the employment increases 5 sectors within the professional business services category was private education, healthcare, government, and then hospitality. Sure. LMI report out, Chair.
Sure. Special initiatives and comprehensive economic development.
Chair, sure. So we have Annette Fedoff, who is our regional organizer.
Orange Workforce Alliance. I represent the three workforce development boards of Anaheim, San Diego, and Kingsbury County of Orange. And so currently we have 2 grants that we are working under, which is the Regional Equity Recovery Partnership Grant and the Regional Implementation 5.0 grant. So our Regional Equity Recovery or our team grant, we have 4 colleges, community colleges that we are working with currently. Our 2 workforce development boards have finally got contracts done, signed, gone through council. So all of that is completed and we are kind of now in this mode of moving full speed ahead. We did get an extension on that grant. It started late as a whole across the state of California. We got a 3-month extension. We're working through our budget modifications and our scope of work to just try to make some adjustments because when we originally submitted our scope, we included the community colleges and they later separated those things out. They have their own scope and we have our own. So we're working through all of these processes on those grants. We're still trying to get programs on the eligible training provider list, so our cybersecurity program. They're working through that process. Unfortunately, they started at a time where requirements were different. Now they have changed. So we are now having to deal with some additional requirements that the state has placed in. So those are things that happen. And those are always going to be, right? We always have to follow our laws, change that come down the pike. So we're working through that. For our Orange County industry sector, the last time I kind of explained to you guys that we had as a region, the 3 workforce development boards chose information technology as the sector that we were going to focus on as far as industry sector engagement. We may be rethinking that after doing some additional research of really just understanding the context that we already have in play with our 3 workforce development boards. Orange County, Orange, you know,
information technology is a little stronger there, not as much as Anaheim and Santa Ana. So we are kind of maybe thinking about doing manufacturing. So we are gathering that data now to try to identify if each one of the boards have stronger manufacturing in each of their areas. So it's going to be between one of those two. But in the meantime, we're just kind of really writing out how we're going to engage these businesses, working with the community colleagues on two different models. We have the next gen sector model, and we have the build model that the community colleges are looking at. And so we're really just trying to figure out how collectively we can do this. Kathy, and I know you talked about bringing you guys all of us into that conversation together so that we are all on the same page and we're in alignment with how we're going to engage industry. We definitely just want to focus on that one sector, get one really going strong, make sure we have lots of businesses at good meetings, not that they're having to go to 100 different meetings across the world, but we have like really big industry sector companies. Some of the other things that we're going to be doing as a region is a regional job fair. So all three workforce development boards is going to happen sometime in October. It will be at the Arctic in Anaheim. So it'll be a fairly large job fair. So we are just starting the planning now and working on what that would look like. So we're going to be wrapping up for that one. It's going to be a big one. So we're probably looking at about 150, 200 employees. That's what we're
October.
We don't have a date just yet. We will know the 15th of the administration at the Arctic. They're going to be ending up the final date on that. So, but around October sometime. And then on the Community Economic Resilience Fund, it is officially called Jobs First. So, stop saying that. So as a whole, California has branded initiative Jobs First. There is, they created a Jobs First Council at the state level that basically is bringing together various departments throughout the state in education and basically trying to align everything at the state level, pushing that down throughout. What you see with the SERF funding in the 13 regional areas, you saw the same thing with the K-16 funding, same 13 regional areas, not to be confused with the Workforce Development Board's 15 regional areas. I don't know if, you know, at some point you may see that change, right? They may try to align all of these regions. Thankfully, Orange County, it's been its own region. So I don't think we have to worry about it being combined with anything else. So we continue down that path. The council is basically going to will coordinate the development of kind of a statewide strategy that is going to be inclusive of just where they're going to invest money, business expansion, workforce development, all of those things are going to have a basically strategy that doesn't come across the board. As far as the Jobs First project, each region has already started their planning. They received the $8 million to do their planning. There will be a plan that is a second part of the plan that's due at the end of August. So once that's done, then we're going to be moving into kind of the implementation. Currently, in our local Jobs First, which OCPC is leading, we are whittling down 91 strategies to about 21? Yeah, I think happy. It's a challenge. There's probably a good 80 some odd people on calls every week, so we have lots of voices. Also, community provided input, so that's how we ended up with probably 91 strategies that we now have practically down to 21. And all to agree with this, right? The HRTC, which is High Roads, what they call the Are they still calling it HRTCs?
No, but I don't know what they're calling it.
I'm going to call it the local council. They may be the ones to basically vote and finalize these strategies, which go into the plan, right? So then once we move into the catalyst and implementation, basically what they're looking at, the outcomes of that is economic competitiveness, economic resilience, and and equity, right? So the
at least 40% of the funds that are going to be provided have to provide direct, meaningful, and sure benefits to disinvested communities. There were 11. Communities that have been identified as disinvested throughout the county. So those 40% of the funds have to go directly into those communities. It has to have an applicant or co-applicant located in or serving in a disinvested community. And it has to align with the racial equity executive order, include equity impact assessments, displacement analysis, and include engagement strategy and feedback mechanisms. So that's the project criteria. It also has to meet climate alignment, the major state climate goals, and then job quality and access, create family sustaining jobs and health care retirement. And then the project would have to then be approved by the local Jobs First Collaborative. For this first round of funding, that money will actually come to the local area. And then the collaborative decides on the project, will vote on the projects. The next round of funding, they plan on applying, having people apply to the state. All this could change. I'm just going to say that, you know, as the budget changes and things shift, you know, timelines have changed and different things have changed. But this is the track that we're on. I think that the California is committed to the project and making sure that investments are in alignment with some of the things that not only from a state level, but also federally, they're looking at where these investments are. And the plan is to have this, the plan that comes out of the collaborative, to be funded not only by the state of California, but also aligned with federal funding so that those things can be funded through other mechanisms. I think that is
that actually
there's room.
Yes.
I should want to this work, but I and
your summary was excellent. Even though it sounds good.
Take a breath. I'm curious to know that, and so we're involved California Jobs First, other region, in fact, reviewed grant applications that were submitted by different organizations in another county, three times the size of Orange County. I'm curious to know where you see Orange County is in this process relative to Los Angeles County or Empire. Is that something that you might give us a little bit of?
You know what? I sat on one of the state calls where all of the different regions were on, and the approach has been very different.
Yes, absolutely.
So I find that to be interesting. You know, we're all skinning this cat in a different way. Can't say that. I mean, it's like being the president. I don't envy that job. And so, how you bring people together, have so many voices in a process, it's a challenge. You know, I have to commend OCBC and just their role in it. It's, you know, I think OCBC is in a good place, to be honest. Our CERT project is in a good place. I follow the Inland Empire a little bit. I think some of them are not quite as far ahead. I don't think anyone has a perfect process. I don't think there is, you know, it's like you make one decision, if you think it's a good decision, and then next thing you know, it comes down to just words sometimes. It really does. It's, you know, we don't like that word. It's challenging, you know, and it's like, oh, okay, so different things mean different things to different people. So just based on their background, so
it's hard to gauge. Where
it really is, you know, something that is offensive to one person not be to another. And it has, not that you would try to be offensive, but it's just understanding what the context of that word means to some people, you know, how it makes them feel, right? And so it could be all day, even I think as we go through these 90 strategies, people are still like, well, no, we don't, but we already voted on this. So, we voted on this. It's now it's just kind of like, okay, how do we get down to 20? So trying not to, because you could be all day just
I don't like that for sure. You know, we got to change this little thing, right? So
I don't know if it's important for this group to understand, but the first set of funding that came out under SERF, when it was still named SERF, were the two awarded projects for that first set of funding.
Oh, yeah.
The urban, the Daisy Urban Farm.
The Daisy
in Santa Ana. And then wasn't the other one the Market in Santa Ana?
The Market, yes. And so they received what they called, it was, they were funded very early on, and they were kind of trust projects. And they are saying that, you know, they kind of look at these as maybe models, but I'll use just the urban farms as an example. The land is owned,
cooperation.
It's a land trust, right? So they have a land trust of the residents, and then they are, you know, building out. Residents were very much involved in the development and the voice of the people, right? That is what the state is looking for.
Yeah.
They want active engagement from individuals. I will say, again, another challenge, I think, that when you bring in individuals who are not familiar, whether it's economic development or anything else with the language, I think the one thing that maybe we could do better would be educating the community on what their role could be and understanding the process, right? So it's like you coming into an economic development meeting and being able to provide some meaningful input when you've never heard the language or have an understanding of the context of it. I think that's where I think we have to do more in making sure that they have a basis of understanding, because even when we voted on industries, like education was one of the top industries,
but I think
it was more about that. Is education is important to me, not necessarily it's industries. So,
exactly.
So we saw things like that I thought, I think people.
It's not going to understand.
Yes.
I
do want to share something that back in the days when I was working at General Motors, and we were going from an old style of manufacturing to lean manufacturing. We used to say that for someone to be able to start understanding lean manufacturing, you actually had to tell them 7 times.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that it's really important to remember is, well, I mean, first of all, I'm brand new, so this is all over my head. But it's like you have to keep explaining things. And when you think, oh my God, do I have to do this again? The people on the other side are just starting to understand. And I think it's actually really important for, you know, the employees, the workforce people, to understand that you've got some experienced people who've been around for a while and some very, very inexperienced people. So even that language just for us,
yeah.
And then forget what you're trying to do as you bring more people in the community to start thinking about. Just like, if you have to explain like what you just did, I probably got about this much. Okay. For me to get to the point where Kathy's at, you've got to do what you just did at least 6 more times. but you see what I mean? And so the education and the language, I actually think you've hit on something. And that's why I wanted to double down on that.
Definitely. There is a learning curve. But from the state's perspective, you know, they call it community-led economic development, and they're, you know, they definitely want to bring the community in. We just have to think differently of how we're going to train the community members to understand that process.
So I want to go back to the conversation that you two were having about financial education and financial literacy. And This actually, it's not even just the language, but you also have people who just don't have financial literacy or understanding. So it's like, oh, here's money to do X. And if they don't have that financial literacy, will the value come out of it?
Chair, can we table that to discussion?
Yeah, just like to move to open discussion.
I have one more item. It's item E.
Yeah.
And it is your comprehensive economic development strategy. So kind of like the timeline hot off presses, have the draft here. So the Orange County Workforce Development Board advises the comprehensive economic development strategy for the entire county. So it's a little bit different purview than the workforce side. So the workforce, you have purview over 32 of the 34 cities. This is for the entire county. And so I have a draft here. I have a presentation scheduled from Dr. Walrod to come to the May full board meeting. But just wanted to kind of give you a timeline. So we have the full draft here. We'll internally review it, get them back some edits, and then we'll come to do the final draft. and then it'll be posted for public comment in 30 days, and then it'll be taken to the board after your review and approval.
Just as a preliminary, it does cover the formerly red zones, the areas.
We have 16 of the our cities that have submitted projects. There's about 42 projects that have been submitted. Santa Ana has the most with 7 projects for economic development. That should be coming to you.
So there's only 16 cities submitting for projects.
So they have to quote, there's a parameter of qualifications. Yeah.
Just with such a change in economic development from every city, I wonder if they even know.
Right. So we reached out to all of the cities in the county, and we had dialogues with their economic development department on the projects they submitted. And so they go,
would it be accurate to say some cities don't even have an economic development?
They
department?
Don't. They don't. Right. And so we will get those.
Yeah, and you just started too. After some of these projects have been successful, try to implement those across as their cities or showcase what they've done.
They do on the city side. So due to this position, but I have worked on this since 2012 with the same report. And what happens is we don't vet or approve projects. We simply include them so that they can go after more federal funding. So the inclusion of their project in the county sense allows them to pursue funding. So we don't actually like vet or approve or see if they meet those qualifications.
Yeah, only reason I was at the League of Cities meeting in Sacramento, and all these cities are talking about all these great things that they're doing, but how does any other city know?
No, right.
It seems like every city wants to copy each other in the race.
Right.
Right. So
looking for that, absolutely.
Right. Is there a way to leverage lessons learned?
Right.
Yeah.
That's it for me, Chair.
Okay. Back
to you.
No, you could.
Just
thinking.
Okay.
That was an excellent.
Yeah, move to open discussion. And so does anybody have anything to discuss? I think what we wanted to do this first meeting was an opportunity to hear all the great stuff that Nancy and her team are doing. So I think I guess I have any questions for them of a little more information if you need that, or just want to talk
about it. As a financial
leader. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Exactly. That. How do I get my acumen up to speed on this items 8 through 5?
Yeah.
Something I can read or
absolutely
private tutorial, whatever.
I will reach out. Yeah, like me too. Absolutely.
Yes.
So okay. You know, we have jargon, right? But there are words that we like to put them in acronyms. Functions, and feel free to reach out to any one of us. Reach out to us and say, hey, to the extent that we can see from different perspectives, because Kathy's perspective will be different from Todd's perspective, different from Mike's perspective, and different from a small business perspective. So we're here to support you and very mindful of the fact that we've got folks who are in the room. And so thank you for anticipating. Hey, can you explain what this means? And just making sure that we're as much on the same page as possible. And to the extent that we can, and I'm not sure if there's one readily available. I'm not asking for more work, but sometimes just like a dictionary of jargon of what these things sometimes mean, which we might take for granted is important, especially if the intention is to engage the community. For example, in affordable housing, what is affordable housing? All the person knows works for, let's say, a manufacturing company that closed is the house is not affordable. And now I got to figure out how to live elsewhere to make it here in Orange County. That's the practical thing. But sometimes we have to use words in a way that connects if we're trying to encourage engagement. So,
Definitely. If you have any members, but not in groups more than three for the Brown Act. But I'm happy to send you material for you to discuss as well.
Okay, so three of us could get together.
No more than three.
No more than four.
Okay.
Which is 11
for the full board, right? So
okay.
For committees. Yeah. For this committee, no more than four.
All right.
It's fine. Offer because we're with the K-16 when it came into the region, which is one of the grants that came a few years ago. What my staff has become really good at doing is condensing into slides. So I would love to gift you a staff member who does the presentation because they don't know this either. So they're one of the people who are like, and so sometimes I'm guilty of this. If you're involved so deeply, you don't even know that what you're saying isn't as clear. So it kind of like takes a third grade level to the language. So I'm offering you, anybody could sit and kind of give, and then they can condense it down, and then they would just give it back. We have nothing to do with that other than developing it, but it's just a free service. I want you to feel free to use. That way it has the consistency of what the region is starting to understand. We did have to build a public vocabulary in the region for the K-16 grant. So it's already a list.
Okay.
So we'll build on that list, add in the workforce development terminology,
nice.
This kind of stuff. And at the same time, I'll be educating my staff about all the stuff that I do a poor job of when I come back from this meeting on how to do what we're trying to do. Because again, I think the idea here is to merge these large entities in our region around the same type of impact and outcome we're trying to have. So I'm offering that. I'll talk about it later, but I'll just have them connect with you guys, do the heavy lift and give it back to me.
And I think that's exactly what kind of thing that would be super valuable for your small business outreach.
And they might find that. So I think they'll get it and they'll be like, ooh, we're just going to tweet this. Because once you have the foundation and it's built along the same language, then they can do it. The font,
exactly.
It has that same
exactly.
Basic.
I think there were things that weren't even touched on that you oversee, right? Like OJT, EDP, HR Hotline, which I don't know if that, I keep using acronyms too. But I mean, there's so many things for a business owner to go from no employees to one, to go from one to five. And then we use for a lot of our employees or our businesses, the county has a free HR hotline, right? Talk to an HR attorney at no cost, free. I mean, those are just resources, right? You oversee all those, right? And they're amazing, right? Or
you didn't point to me.
Yeah, but I don't know. If you want to touch on maybe on the job training and the inside of what that means for a business owner.
Yeah, definitely.
Sorry, I didn't get to put you on the spot.
And so some of our, what we like to call hiring incentives, or we'd like to, when we meet with businesses, we like to say it's a hiring incentive because at the end of the day, they're going to get money back invested for their business if they partner with our services, with their career services programs. We have two different ones. One of them is what we call work experience. I think of it as an internship. Literally, it's an internship. They let us know what kind of positions they need, usually entry-level positions, that they are looking to fill. We have a wide network of job seekers, all of those individuals who are enrolled in our career services programming. And then we select candidates from that pool. That's the only requirement from the business, right? That they allow us to select candidates from this pool of job seekers who are actively looking for employment. Once we select these individuals, the employer gets to decide whether they want to place them at their site or not for work experience, because it's like an internship. We pay for their wages. So they're not working for free. So we owe a program, which is federally funded. We use federal funds to pay for those wages, for them to be placed at the work site for this internship for up to 12 weeks. At the end of the 12 weeks, the employer gets to decide if they want to hire them permanently or not. They don't have to, because that's not part of that type of training program or hiring incentive program. If they do, fantastic, right? They get to keep them a fully trained employee, because now they've used 12 weeks to really train them and upskill them and really get them up to speed without having to invest any other business dollars or any other budget. So if they hire them, great. If they don't, that's okay. That wasn't part of the deal. But now the job seeker leaves trained with great skills, hopefully a great reference to put into their resume. And then we help them look for a permanent position. The other one is our on-the-job training. On-the-job training, again, the employer decides what position they want to hire for. There are a little bit more requirements because it does have to pay self-sufficient wages, which right now is $30.46, I believe, for Orange County. So the physician does have to pay that amount and provide benefits, but the employer hires them and agrees to train one of these job seekers that we will refer over to them based off of what their qualifications and criteria are. The training period is typically about 12 weeks. It could be more, depending on the position. At the end of that training period, we reimburse for a portion of the wages. So we are, you know, because we understand it's expensive to train somebody who needs training, a new employee, it's a lot of an investment on behalf of the business. So in a way, we owe it. The federal government wants to reward this employer, this business, for selecting one of our job seekers and agreeing to train them, fully train them, by reimbursing them for a portion of those wages, typically about 50%. Typically about 50%. It depends on the size of the business. Smaller businesses get a higher reimbursement rate. And it also depends on the job seeker. The job seeker has a barrier to unemployment. For example, they were homeless or they had been incarcerated, things of those sort, and it could be even higher. It could be sometimes up to 90%.
Questions. Yes. For both those categories, does the potential employee from your pool, do they have to qualify under one of the 14 categories under WIOA?
Under the 14 categories?
So the 14 barriers.
Oh, for youth? So,
well, not just for youth, but for the first category.
No, these have to be enrolled into WIOA. Yeah, so they have to be either a duplicated worker, which means that they've been laid off, or they have to qualify under our adult program. Typically means that they are either a veteran, they are low income, they don't have a job, they're underemployed. So those are the requirements for our adult programs, adult dislocated worker, but we also have our youth program. And those are out of school youth, in school youth, and that's where those,
So they have to barrier to employ. There's a policy, a federal policy under WIOA. It's not as though it's just anyone and everyone. It's to really help uplift those amongst us who have or have had barriers to
employment.
That's the point of it. And then my question has to do with legal. So in both of those instances, OJT and the first hiring incentive, which was the first
experience,
is the employee a W-2?
And sub question to that,
what if it's not working out within that 12-week period? What are the strategies?
So, great question. So if it's not working out, what we do ask, we do have a performance improvement plan form, right? Because we want the employer to understand when we start these programs with them is that these individuals might have barriers to employment, right? So they might require a little bit more training, a little bit more effort and investment on their end. Not all the time, but sometimes. I mean, that's probably the case with everybody nowadays. But we do have a performance improvement plan. So we do ask that whenever there are issues that they are addressed and they let us know, because these job seekers, individuals who are in these training programs, have case managers as well. So they have the ability to provide soft skills training or career counseling to ensure that whatever barriers they are facing within that training program, current employer, are addressed with their case managers, with the team of professionals who are experts are doing that. So we do have a performance improvement plan that they will submit to us, the employer will, when there are issues that are identified. So we do ask that there's some type of corrective counseling conducted. If it doesn't work out, then it doesn't work out. They're not stuck with the person. They don't have to continue the program if it doesn't work out.
But if you just want to continue with the offering, could you help find another person?
Absolutely, yes.
And are they a W-2 for purposes of, yes.
Are they a W-2?
Correct.
Yes.
Does the business then count that person as a W-2 and therefore have to?
Not for work experience, because they are the employee of the service provider we contract with, but for on-the-job training, yes, because it is their employee, they hire them, so they will have to, do their own touch.
It's a rough pool of people we're talking about.
Say that again?
The rough size of the pool of people that.
Oh, geez. In Orange County, I don't know the enrollment number. I think about 1,000.
Annually, probably 2,000 across all that programming.
Yeah. So we have quite a large
range of
Currently active in the program, like at one time, we typically carry about 300. So we're going from one program year to the next program year, we're carrying about 300 participants, and that's for each of our programs. That's the youth programs, probably about 300 participants, for the dislocated worker program, about 300 participants, the adult program, about 300 participants. Those ones who are currently actively involved in the program, but annually about 2,000.
We need your business card or something.
What is our business?
Oh, she wants your business card.
That's a great question. So if a business were interested in how much paperwork, right, and reporting is required?
We try to do as minimal paperwork as possible because we understand business owners are busy. A lot of the times they're small businesses that we are supporting, and they don't have the time to do all of the paperwork. So there is a an application that they do have to complete, you know, for we are utilizing federal funds, and we have to make sure that we're responsible with those funds. So there's a small application, about 2 pages long, that they do need to complete. And after that, for work experience, they do have to complete timesheets because we are going to be paying the job seeker or the individual who's in that training program. So they do need to complete the timesheet, or mostly sign it and submit applications or an evaluation. And that's about it. It's really easy. If there's a performance of the fund, then also we don't have to submit paperwork for that. But that's pretty much it for all the job training. Same thing. There's an application, evaluation.
The performance improvement plan, the caseworker will do it with the employer. They don't have to come up with it on.
No, they'll have to do this with the job seeker, with the job training department. Yeah, because the caseworker wouldn't necessarily know what the issues are. They will receive a copy of it so that then the case manager can address those issues with the job seeker within the monthly meetings.
Go over one more time, what are the qualifications for a WHEO enrolled person that could qualify for OJT?
What are the qualifications? So for WHEO.
Yeah, right to work is a big one. So for adult dislocated work will be someone who's been recently laid off or has received notice of layoff. For an adult participant, basically they have to have right to work in the States. If they are a male, they need to have registered for selective service. Some kind of barrier, which could be underemployed, unemployed. It's pretty easy to be a program participant with a result. Dislocated workers, the same criteria, just they have to be recently laid off or receive notice of layoff. And then youth participants, basically the same thing. They do have to have a variance of 14 outlets. It could be anything from, you know, low income to, you know, single mother to someone. There's a wide variety. So holistically, you know, job seekers can qualify typically. If you're looking for work, then you're like,
and for the roles, could they be for part-time as well as full-time? Is there a preference for full-time?
For on-the-job training, it has to be a full-time. For work experience, because it's limited in time, so we're paying for the wages. So yeah. The employer's paying for the wages. So we'd like to give at least 30 hours because we do want these individuals who are being trained to get some income, right? It's supposed to be provide them not only some experience, but we want them to get paid and be able to.
I also wonder if that's possible that an employer can do a reverse referral. Like perhaps Robert would find somebody that he'd like to employ but wanted to see would they qualify. Is that possible?
Yes. So in certain situations, it depends on a case-by-case basis. However, sometimes that is a possibility. If there's we have a work site already, an active work site with the employer, and they already have a candidate, then we can refer to our career services program so they can assess for eligibility. And if they're eligible for WHEO, then they can.
So I had an aha just listening, and it kind of gets me back to like that slide deck thing that we were talking about earlier. Like on the website, I would imagine that if we did a thing, does your business qualify for work experience? And it just has a really quick little thing. Does your business qualify for OJT? Like right now, I think they don't. I think the general consensus is, and I'm just thinking from living in Orange County my whole life, so like you can't part of the board, I have no idea about any of this.
I think the general condition is that people don't know if they're just a normal human being in the world that has made average money or even whatever. They don't know that they have any of these services available.
Yeah.
I think what Francis was just saying is pretty much the right to work, right? If you're an adult, pretty much going to be able to be served by the services we have here. And so that huge disconnect means that we have a huge communication problem.
Yeah.
And so what we have to do is not only on the worker side, but on the business side, create really a branding and marketing campaign. But I say that like, let's not pay for it. Let's really get a basic step, because that's a part of bureaucracy. It takes a lot of time to hire or figure out, like, let's look at what's already worked. K-16 campaigning then in the local region. So you and I will have a different conversation offline, because I feel like there's some pretty simple things we can do. But all of us think, we probably all know five people that are unemployed right now, and we had no idea they could probably go and sit with somebody tomorrow, today. They can just go to a website. But honestly, I don't know what to tell them. I don't know if I tell them, pick up the phone, which they don't want to do, by the way. I don't know if I can say, go to this website. And then I'm not really sure how to give them those 1, 2, and 3 steps to get them to connect with the staff and become one of those 2,000 people that are in your database.
Our website does have a link to our basic eligibility assessment to determine whether they are eligible or not. That's the first step that they can do. They can go to the website, and there's one of the first things that will be in our homepage is the link to that assessment. So
maybe as a board member, we just need that. Like, who do you know that's unemployed? As a board member, this that might need our services, I want to be able to hand that out. So something like a little card or something.
When your business cards that are coming, there's a link to our website.
Perfect.
So
that's okay. On the business side, I just want to, we know that there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of businesses in Orange County that don't know of this. So that's one of the things that we've been really proactive and really trying to work on, and getting the word out there about those services by doing those outreach calls and utilizing our call center, not just to inform them about all of these hiring incentive programs, but also about layoff aversion and cumber worker training. So we have two different sets of phone calls going out. We utilize Econview, which is a database that has a list of all of our reports, and we can pull reports based off where a business is in the business cycle. So we see that they are hiring, they're growing, that we call and we let them know that we have all of these hiring incentive programs. That's how we're trying to reach out to new businesses. If they are on the other end of that spectrum, we reach out to let them know about rapid response, layoff conversion, how can we support them on that. So we're doing both. Obviously, it takes, there's hundreds of businesses and small staff, but we're really trying to get the word out there.
Yeah, no, my point is, I want to revalidate, because I'll make sure you didn't hear this differently. We know what you're doing. The challenge is you need to be using us, and we don't have the verbiage to be able to re-say. We can't, you guys are so knowledgeable that we don't have the right verbiage to say. So what are the materials that we could use, where we don't necessarily have to have the conversation, but we get them. So we're 10 times what you are, right? And we're helping with that.
Would it help to put in your meetings just maybe a small section every time that we meet to walk through where the resources are, just even that
and calls to action, right? So you have the information, but the action,
there's also
the connection, right?
So three things. I know it was 3 years ago, there was an outreach campaign that was embarked upon, but it was really more about rebranding to create a brochure, which is a nice piece. But I think the call to action is the part that's going to either convert you or just kind of go, oh, that was interesting. So a couple of things. I'm curious to know, so we have 2,000 people in the program, and then 2,000 people from the pool and 300 who are currently enrolled. Is that right? And is that because we just need more businesses to know more about the opportunity and therefore make that match?
Well, these are individuals, right? Yeah. So every individual has their own needs.
Yes.
Some of them are going through training programs, right? Maybe they're on scale. So we're bringing them through a training programs. It can take a few months. Some of them is very simple, right? They just need a resume, desktop, and you need to be connected with those correct employees. So it's hard to say, we've got 300 people enrolled in the program actively. Some aren't very active. When I say they're active, yes, they're enrolled in the program, they're going to say case manager, but maybe they're not engaging with us as actively as someone else who's coming into the center daily, weekly. So it's individuals. It's all individual, as Chris says. It's just really hard to say why they're carrying that many people. But that's kind of typically what we're hearing, we're hearing about 300 adults about to be anticipated workers, about 300 people.
And then as it relates to more people knowing about who we are, I always think about, you know, nobody from AAA here, but AAA, right? When you think of AAA, what do we think? It's the place where you go when it relates to breakdown cars, anything related to cars. So this is now we're putting a strategist hat on. How, if at all, can we, and I don't know what the time frame be, could be, because it is still a best kept secret. And, you know, we've gone through some transitions, but how can we, and Nancy and I have had many, many conversations strategy about how can we position the board and the work, the wonderful work that the staff does and the ecosystem partners here to know that this is a place that could be like the AAA when it comes to anything related to work and employment and even small business, right? But because you're part of it, you're part of the ecosystem. That's kind of the challenge out there.
Yeah.
How do we then have everyone who thinks of AAA, thinks of first now OCWDB or workforce, thinks of this is the place where you can go and get all kinds of resources? And
so I have an idea that you just triggered. Our guy who did the presentation, he's talking to workforce development boards all over, right? Who does he think does the best job with the outreach, and what can we learn from them?
He said Fresno, I think it was.
Yeah. Oh, Fresno.
Madero, Fresno.
And it's, you know, inside California, outside California, right? There's workforce development boards everywhere. Someone actually ought to be pretty darn good at communicating. People know, oh, go to the workforce development board.
Right.
So who's good at that? And even if we just copied what they did,
right,
it might be a great place to start.
I'm going to say something, too, that one thing about K-12 education is we have all their kids, right? They're all the kids living, except for kids who are going to private school. But anyway, my point is that there's parents to all those kids, or guardians to all those kids, and they have mandatory meetings that these parents go to. And so some of the outreach, maybe we go into what they call the ELAC and DLAC school site council meetings, and there's a little commercial. It's free, and they're held all throughout the year, all the time. So even if it's something that we videotape, where you guys don't have to have staff going, but we get that out, like I can navigate getting this kid to those venues, if there's something that's put together in a toolkit or in a thing, something very virtual-ish. Again, and unless people want to start going to this meeting, which that's, you know, we've got, you know, let's just say we've got 86 high schools, 112 middle schools, bubble elementary schools. All of those schools have multiple parent and guardian meetings all the time. So what could we streamline to them? Because those parents and guardians have no idea, especially English language learners typically, parents that don't speak English, that they have all these community services available too. So it's a free way of targeting communication into communities around Orange County that I can absolutely open doors to if that's something that we create the resources around.
WA presentation was supposed to have a tail end of about an hour for action item planning, because the strat plan is done. We've worked on that for the last 18 months, 2 years. And so I think that's something that we need to think through, because there are a lot of ideas, right? And yet we've got staff, and then we've got to figure how do we manage and prioritize what can potentially make the biggest impact for everyone that can touch as many people as possible. And so that's something that we can discuss to see what's the next step, because I'm hearing a lot of wonderful, wonderful concepts and ideas.
We think Annette is working with the three boards to put together a three board-wide strategic planning session for each labor. I don't know if you have any updates or
So that's the plan, to bring the three workforce development boards together. Just whole concept of just engaging businesses across the board and in alignment, not only with our three boards, but as well as with our with education and our community college. So all trying to do the same thing. So want to collectively bring that together and action items around how we engage the marketing. I totally get the language, you know, in some other roles that I've played, we used, you know, marketing agencies and to the business language, like it has to come from
what are the words businesses like, you know, whether it's productivity, profitability, like we say, you know, on the job training, but it really is, what is the bottom line to that business? We save time, save money, you know, and using that language to really appeal to them, that is not WIOA, federal language, to really craft marketing material to bring that to your small, you know, your small businesses. A lot of times your workforce development boards do kind of cater to the small businesses, that to them in the sense of, well, they're less likely to come to something because, so it's usually more of the boots on the ground. But if you don't have the staff resources to actually get out there, start touching on those doors with business development chambers or definitely those connections a lot of times. But the ones that, you know, could use the services. I was just talking to somebody earlier today about, I know it was Brett about Rapid Response, and the small businesses used to go, how did they don't know sometimes about Rapid Response, but it really does take even board members to say, you know what, I miss that my local whatever is going to be right off, and letting the boards know so that we can connect to those employees also in those ways. So we don't expect.
Well, so I think we do that here. Contact it's you, Lisa. And find out those resources.
And if you don't know who to contact, you can always contact me, whether it's, you know, I can direct to any one of the boards or any one of the people there. So
it would be interesting to have a meeting of 26 city and FMA chambers in Orange County to have them all come to this, have you guys with your whole team kind of present, because I think that's what it takes. You know, is continually pushing, because I'll, you know, I sell
seven times,
right? Well, I sell your programs myself and I just act like they're ours. People get all excited. But I think the point of it is that they just don't know. So I guess one question that we're talking about marketing is, does the county have a budget for marketing, or is that potential to, like in the SEDS grant, and kind of carve some money out, or the Jobs First grant and say, well, job marketing there?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, we always allowed it now as of last year.
So we have some regional funding.
Yeah, like traditionally our strategy is writing this grant process when we get funding, because typically traditionally we weren't allowed to use WIOA funding at all. And WIOA funding is really funding our programming, right? So it's not a lot of money left over, but we don't have much of the ways county funding allocated to our programming. So it's all about grants and prices. We definitely try and write it in, and that's very difficult to make sure that, because outreach is important.
And like, to your point, I mean, we used to do this, but we haven't done it since COVID, but partnered with the OCBC and some of the cities, and we used to do regional, the Orange County Workforce Economic Development Working Group or some long name, but it was basically all the economic development cities plus any partners at one of the departments, basically to educate each other on stuff and maybe look at regional things. So we could certainly resurrect that presentation. I mean, it's more than a time.
Yeah, I'll send you guys an invitation. We're doing a minority business summit in 2 weeks where every city economic development, all the other chambers, everybody. But we pushed out a survey to 1,000 businesses, but less than 10 employees, and came back with two things. One, they all need access to capital. They don't always know why, but they all need money. And half of them were looking to hire. What a great opportunity to take advantage of everything the county's doing. They just don't know how. I mean, again, like, they're hiring one person.
Business service
right.
Unit going to
yeah.
Be as well.
Yeah. So there's opportunity everywhere.
Yeah. Would you send that to concierge?
Yeah. So are we done?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Go
for it.
Yeah. One dumb question. I'm wondering here. So I heard about this pool of 2,000 people. You have unemployment rates for computers. It's equating to a lot more than 2,000 people. Is that part of our target audience? How do you get a percentage of the 4.2? Because maybe there's a certain percentage of people that just don't want to work anymore, whatever that layer is. But again, I'm guessing it's a lot bigger than 2,000. So is the target to get a big portion of this 4.2% into that program, or is there other divisions, if you will, that we can find these people?
It's a loaded question.
Yes.
And that's why you have to talk about partners, right? So EDD is actually in our brick and mortar center. They take up a good stake. So they're serving that population, right? That employee population. And they have orientations where they connect with our programming. It's all customer choice, right? So it's up to the individual if they want to go down that. It's delicate though, right? So I mean, if we were to triple the amount of participants we serve, we still got the same amount of money. So the amount of dollars per participant greatly reduces, right? So currently, if we have a participant, we're able to spend up to $10,000 on training services for that individual. We can spend up to $6,000 on support services for that individual. If we get a lot of individuals maximizing those spends, we run out of money very quickly, and then we get participants to be constant because we don't have funding to provide what they need. So it's definitely, it's a balancing act. Yeah, we want to serve everyone who needs our services, but at the same time, we don't want to bite off more than we can chew. But yeah, we are connected to BDD. That's why they are part, they are a mandated partner, they're part of our system. It's when people file for that unemployment, they connected with us, and hopefully they bridge that gap actually enrolled in our program.
And Rob Claudio, our vice chair of the board.
Yes. We've
been here for 33 years.
Sounds like we're capped, right? It sounds like there's a certain percent of that work.
I mean, we can serve more. We can definitely serve more people. It's a slippery slope, you know. But you know, if we do start serving more people, maybe we start getting more funding.
Yeah.
So
yes.
Thank you. Appreciate you getting close.
Any other questions?
And if you're successful, then there may be fewer people that you can serve down the road.
Hopefully, yeah. And also, this is where Nancy's coming in, done a great job where she's been identifying a lot of grant opportunities for us to go, so we can get these different pots of money where we can leverage funding across our programs, cast a wider net of who we can serve, right? Maybe someone doesn't have a right to work, so they're not eligible, but then if we can get some grant funding, which allows us to serve that individual and assist them. So Nancy's been very aggressive. Good point. That's great news for you as we go into the new program year of opportunities that we're going after. And, you know, money funds everything, right?
Yes.
You know, we need the dollars to back these programs. We've got great programs, great resources, but if the resources are finite, we can also need you.
Thank you. Thank you, Nancy. Thank you to your team. And thank you guys for being here. I brought some chocolate, so you guys all have to take some. I'm not taking it back with me. So, yeah, you're officially adjourned. Yeah, there you go. Yeah.